tech items like smartphones and tablets seem to many adults like a natural part of being a kid. Most even believe that early understanding of these must-haves is an important part of building a child's future. My next guest is here to counter that belief in a rather interesting way. His recent New York Times column brought to light how high tech removes a natural and many believe much needed foundational element within a child for their maturing and for their future. Here to explain all of this, as featured in his monthly New York Times column, This Life, is a best-selling author whose books include The Secrets of Happy Families and Generation Freedom, The Middle East Uprisings and the Remaking of the Modern World, as well as host of PBS's Sacred Journeys, Bruce Feiler. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
BruceFeiler.com, the obvious location on the web. And, you know, Bruce, I guess the old saying used to be, I could read someone like a book. Now we call it body language. And that's talent, that ability, that awareness is something you say kids are denying themselves because of, as I alluded to in the introduction, the high-tech world that they have embraced so hard.
So we know that part of being human is being able to read, as you just said, nonverbal communications. I mean, and we learn this very young. I mean, think of children mimicking their parents' faces or playing peekaboo, that sort of looking at others in order to figure out what they're saying and communicating. And as we get older, and this was part of just sort of essential elements of survival, is that person threatening or not threatening? And you can't always tell it from their words, right? You tell it from the glances or the posture or the crossed arms or how they're looking at you or not looking at you. So we learn to read nonverbal communications. And what academics are beginning to identify is that we're losing this ability. And not just academics, all of us realize that we're all looking into our screens all the time, and we have this fear. And I've written, as you said, I've written this column about families for 6 years now in the New York Times, and I wrote the book The Secrets of Happy Families, and I talk a lot about families, and always, I mean, every time I talk, the first question is about technology and what's it doing to our children, and the answer is we're beginning to get a sense, it's not definitive in any way, that all of this looking into screens is hampering our ability to read these nonverbal cues.
Yeah, it seems like only because of social media in particular, maybe Skype to a lesser degree, kids, and I was surprised with some of the studies in your column, to how young some of these kids are who have so fully embraced technology that they're used to interacting with a one-dimensional image as opposed to a three-dimensional person.
Look, I'm a dad myself. I have 10-year-old identical twin girls, and I understand that there are times where you just need to get the meal cooked or, you know, go to the bathroom or you need help, and maybe a screen can be your help. The problem is not that. The problem is, you know, Kai, you mentioned these studies. Kaiser says we're looking at screens 7.5 hours a day, children are. A study that came out this month from Pew said that a quarter of all teenagers are online, quote, almost constantly, is what the survey said. The amount of time children under 8 look at screens has tripled even in the last 2 years. So we are using it way too much. Now, for you and me, because we learned to read these nonverbal cues before screens, we have that ability within us. Even teenagers today who didn't have things like iPads or phones in their faces all the time when they were young have it. I talked to this researcher at UCLA, and they took 11-year-olds to a summer camp for 5 days. Pretty good gig, by the way. So for five days, no screens, just face-to-face activities. They tested these children before and after the five-day camp, and they compared them to people who maintained their normal screen habits back at home. And in the ability to read faces and videos and photographs, there was a huge uptick just in 5 days. And what the researchers said was, well, on the one hand, it was great news that just 5 days of turning off screen could restore these habits. But these kids who are now 14 would have learned this. And what she said, well, I'm worried about children who get access to these when they're 2 and 3 and 4. They don't have time to learn these skills, and therefore maybe they can't be restored after a vacation or a summer camp away from a screen.
Bruce Feiler, best-selling author. His books include The Secrets of Happy Families and Generation Freedom. He's hosted PBS's Sacred Journeys, a whole host of books and more that you can find in BruceFeiler.com. He's also the columnist for the New York Times with his monthly column, This Life, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I'm reading your column, Bruce, and I'm thinking about the long-range effects of the absence of this ability, too. And I thought back to a time I used to do sports memorabilia shows in another life, and you get to meet some of the baseball players who come and do autographs. And I remember seeing Ted Williams sitting at the end of a bar after the show was done, and waved the bartender over and said, whatever, Mr. Williams, is have him. If he wants a second one, put it on my tab, which he did. And bartender comes back and says, Ted wants to thank you for doing that. So I go down. And I never met in my life, never knew anything, but I had been trained that when you shake someone's hand, and as you write about in this life,
yeah,
firm handshake, look him in the eye. And I learned later, if you did that with Ted Williams, he was your friend forever because he respected that.
Well, there are some children, autistic children, people on the spectrum for whom eye contact is difficult. But for all the rest of us, it is essential to being human. This whole piece began, as you mentioned, in the New York Times. And if you go to brucefire.com, I have it posted up there, with the fact that my father, when I was growing up in South Georgia in the 1970s, he would teach everyone to shake hands. And it was a three-step process: firm grip, squeeze, look me in the eye. Now, in the 70s, that was back when women and girls did that kind of demure four-finger handshake, right? And that was the biggest problem. The biggest problem was the firm grip. Well, now, because gender equality has leveled the handshake, if you will, I do this all the time, and with children of my friends who dare bring them around me, and no one will look me in the eye, and it's very pronounced. And you know, for a long time, I thought, okay, you know, they're young, kids are, you know, off and off, we're around adults, I'm a big, tall guy, and maybe that's what it was. And then I met this professor at Stanford who named Cliff Nass, who basically told me about research he was doing of girls between 8 and 12. And he found that the more time they looked in screens, the more awkward they are. They had friends their parents didn't approve of, and it was sort of almost like a gateway drug for a host of other problems. The less time these girls looked in screens, the higher the quality of friendships, the more sleep that they got, the better they performed in school. Now, this is only one study, and this is sort of a new area, right, because this whole phenomenon is only several years old, but we all had phones and iPads on us all the time. But it is something that's concerning, and you know, the response of this piece, you know, the most emailed piece for the entire weekend of the New York Times, was, I think, touches at this sort of instinct that parents have. And you know, one of the problems is that the parents are really bad at it. We're all staring at our screens all the time, and that's where the children are learning it from.
And I think, too, further down the line, if some of these kids who have that ability to read someone they're quote-unquote interacting with, albeit poorly in most cases, if they can't read that person at a job interview, for example, how can they stay in control of the job interview if they can't tell, gee, that answer didn't fly too well with the person I'm speaking with, because A, I'm not looking at that person, and I've got the dancing eyes going, and B, I can't tell the person is now drawing away from me, and I'm losing this interview. I mean, there's going to be some long-range effects off of the idea you just talked about that we're just now discovering the immediate effects.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And you see this as children get older, and group dating is a good example, right? So we know that there is this pattern that has upticked in recent years of group dating, right? So people go on, the sort of young people between, I don't know, let's just say 15 and in their early 20s, they go in groups and they socialize, and then they have these impersonal sexual hookups afterward. And Cliff Nass, in fact, linked this with this ability, saying that the traditional one-on-one date where you sit across from someone and look in their eyes is, in effect, overstimulating for people because they are so used to this. So, you know, fast forward to the job interview or to working with a boss or towards some sort of daily but somewhat high-stress situation that you're going to encounter when you enter the adult world. And again, these things are instinctual, so we have them within us. But what the researchers I spoke to said was, if we don't practice them when we're young, they're going to be, you know, flabby, like muscles you don't exercise.
Yes.
Or skills that you don't hone.
And Bruce has a few ideas, too, which you can see in the column that he's archived at brucefiler.com. But really, the old saying, just look me in the eye, make some face-to-face time with your kids, and certainly picking them up from school, for example, and just instill in them to where it becomes a return to that natural ability of looking someone into the eye, and a lot of the pieces that are missing are going to fall back into place. It's a real, you know, Bruce, it really is a simple solution if parents are just, well, look their kids in their eye and see, you know, get one half of the equation going, the other half will hopefully quickly follow. So you can see this column and Bruce's other work all archived and offered up for your obtaining at brucefiler.com. best-selling author, TV host, and monthly columnist in the New York Times, a column This Life. Bruce Feiler, thanks for being here this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. And, you know, make eye contact. Make face-to-face time with your family. Everybody will benefit.